Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustments to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. I am your host for tonight, Babbler, and here with me, I believe we have Pam. How's it going, Pam?
It is going good. You know, kind of a lazy day, a little bit tired, but, you know, other than that, life is good. Looking forward to hanging out with you and, you know, getting into tonight's poetry. And how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I had a super busy work day, but it wasn't a bad work day. It was just busy. But that's all right. I got a lot
of always good.
Huh?
Yeah. Oh, I said just kept you on your toes.
Yeah, one of those. It was just from one thing to the next, and then the next thing I knew I had been at work for way too long. That's okay.
Yep.
It's Friday, and Friday is my Friday, so I've got the next 2 days off, so that's great.
Nice.
Well, Aspasiana is out today. I believe she is celebrating her husband's birthday, if I'm correct. And so she has left us with her wonderful contest that she set up for tonight. Go ahead and give her contest a read. The quote that she had for tonight's show is, "See, we are wrong when we say I think, therefore I am. The more we say it, the more it sounds like I think, therefore I will be. You cannot think yourself into a full table. You cannot think and make walls and a roof appear around you. I have thought and thought myself into corners made of words, nightmares, and what it has gotten me but more thoughts, a currency that only buys more currency. So please, if you want to continue existing, do something. Learn to make clouds with only your breath. Build a house, even if every wall leans to the left. Love it anyway, just like a season, just like a child. Love how you hate yourself sometimes, because goddamn, at least there's still something to hate. It's so easy to think and keep thinking until you are the last person left on Earth, until the entire world is no larger than the space between your bed and the light switch. But I hear the world is ending soon, and when we go, and we're all going to go, Neil Hilburn." So that was the contest that she had for tonight's show. There were lots of
very
really good
cool.
writes.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a great quote, and there's a lot of really good writes. We got to this, so I'm pretty excited to read about it. I thought it was an excellent quote. I'm not sure exactly what the book is, but I definitely enjoy that. It's just a piece of inspiration. There's definitely a lot of oomph behind it. All right. Did you want to drop quotes on the board, Pam, or would you like me to do that tonight?
I would be happy to do that. That's fine. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right. So let's see what we got up first. All right. First we have, bringing it over to the group, and all right. We have Thinking by Paul Thomas One. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Thinking by Paul Thomas One. Thought is a human abstract, the same as truth and love. Action is required to transform it to concrete, the same as knowledge. What is read in a book, learned in a new job, heard in a classroom cycles through synapse before filtering to hands. The only exception, emotion, frequently preceding thought. Thought is not even innovative. Its history seconds to old age. Ideas proceed, if only seconds. A longer why of the why, if excuse or blame thought. The first why might be childhood, the second a present-day dilemma. Each a part of decision-making, but with habits, traits between. Would you like to experience an original thought, pure in its conception? To the womb return, unless mom and dad already influenced. I thought this was a really interesting write, you know. The idea that thinking is, you know, a bit overrated. And in some cases it is. I mean, I think about sometimes my less productive days at work, or at least what feels like my less productive days at work, are the days where most of my work happens in my head, like all the processing. But at the end of the day, you don't really have anything to show for that. And that's kind of what this feels like is, you know, thinking's great and whatever, but if you don't do anything with the consequences of your thought or the conclusions that you come to or the decisions that you make, it's not really worth a lick. You know, what's read in a book, learned a new job, heard in a classroom, cycles through synapse before filtering to hands. So, like, if you don't do anything with it, it's not much. You know, it's a flash in a pan. I do like that there is an exception for emotion, you know, implying that, like, even emotion, though fleeting and not much to do with thought, has more value than thinking. Value isn't really the right word. It's not like there's devaluing thought. That's not really what the piece is about. It's just about, I guess, effectiveness. You know, it's without communication, thinking doesn't do much good. You know, thought is not even innovative. It's history seconds to old age. Most things that you think are not original ideas. There are things that have been thought before. You know, sometimes I wonder if I've ever actually had an original thought in my life. Or not so much a thought, but at least an idea, you know. Because there have been so many people before me and so many thinkers and so many intelligent people that, you know, do I really have anything new to offer intellectually? I'm not sure. I also thought the part of the piece where he says the first why might be childhood. The second present-day dilemma, the first why is something that happened to you in your youth, and the second why is something that happened more frequently. And I thought that is interesting because it's kind of like about consequence, you know, why am I angry now? Oh, because when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And you hear that so often, you know, like how childhood traumas or situations or the way things were affect how you live now. I know that it's kind of expressed here as like is looking for excuse or blame, but I think it applies even to things that aren't. You know, like I think about my childhood and how I grew up without electricity or hot water readily available, and how it makes me appreciate those things more because I didn't have them. You know, and that, again, is the why. You know, why do I enjoy a hot bath day? Because I didn't have it when I was a kid. So I thought it was really interesting. And then the very end, you know, to the womb return. So, like, you want to have an original pure thought that's untainted from, like, outside influence. You have to go all the way back to when you weren't even born yet. And then it goes, even then, you're probably already influenced by mom and dad. So I thought this was a really interesting piece, you know, just kind of about the value of thinking. So excellent write from Paul Thomas. Your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, great comment there. I'm sorry. Geez, I can't keep people straight. Babbler. Sorry. Yeah, I really liked this. I liked what you had to say. And I agree that the idea that, you know, while thinking is important, it's not the end all. You know, there's more to it. I feel like that life is about taking steps. And one of the first steps is to think about something. But if you only stay there, then you're just basically like stuck in like hard cement. And, to me, this is also about the importance of learning through doing, because it's, you know, the experience that's so important. I did particularly like those second and third stanzas. That brings up the third one, bringing up the question why, and the idea of looking at the where it says each a part of decision making, but with habits traits between. And sometimes it's hard to make a decision when, you know, habits and traits get in the way. I thought there was a nice kind of sardonic bite in the end, you know, with the idea of you want to have a original thought pure in its conception to the womb return, unless mom and dad already influence you. Because as we all know, you know, you could return to the womb over and over again. And once you come out, from the very beginning, there's going to be people and circumstances influencing your thought. And so just really a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree with that. That outside influence starts like so young. But I do like the idea too that it starts even before you're born. You know, you wonder how much of who you are starts even as early as like what your mom ate when you were in the womb. You know,
That's true.
My mom ate a lot of strawberries and fish when she was pregnant with me. Like, a lot of strawberries and fish. And I'm like, oh, both of those are really high in, like, omega. I'm like, maybe that's why I'm kind of smart.
There you go.
But who knows?
There you go. Yeah, you know, and plus the fact that they say that babies can, like, hear, like, music and stuff while they're still in the womb. And you wonder how much of an influence that kind of stuff has, too. So.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
I've even heard things like about memories encoded in DNA. No idea how much of that is factual, just some, you know, weird perusing of reading that I do. But it's fascinating concept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It sounds like a fascinating concept. You know, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I know it happens with animals, but right? Because, you know, like mm-hmm. with the migrating and stuff like that, there's memory put into the DNA. So,
yeah.
I could see it being plausible for people.
Yeah, like they've done studies on an animal too where they'll take, oh God, I forgot what animal it was. It might even just been mice, where they basically have a traumatic experience done on like the mother mouse. You know, like scare her with, you know, a particular object, and then she has baby mice, and then they try scaring the baby mice with that, and they are equally, like, the traumatic behavior that their mother had is emulated, even though they had no experience with that before. So it's kind of fascinating studies, like, anyway.
Huh.
I think
cool.
I mean, probably a little too much science.
Yeah. You gotta wonder, though, like, I don't know. I don't know how I would feel being the person who got paid to scare, traumatize a mouse. You know?
Yeah.
It just...
Well,
definitely one of those
odd
jobs.
Yeah, I was a biology major in college, and they actually had us do experiments on mice. And I got paired with this girl who was very animal rights oriented. Not that I'm not. It's not like I'm out there going, let's, you know, cut their legs off and see what happens. Like, no. But she was super passionate about it. And so we went, like, way out of our way during our experiment to, like, not do anything harmful to the mice we had to work with. And I'm just like, oh, man, there are so many experiments done on mice. So I'm like, ah.
But. Right. Yeah. No, I believe in, you know, I believe in taking care of animals, not being cruel to them, you know, so,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you got to kind of balance things out. Like, you know, I went out to lunch one time with this friend and she was talking about how she swerved to not hit a squirrel. And I said, no, you don't do that. You just keep going or, you know, or then she, like, either swerves or she slams on her brake, and I'm like, what are you thinking? And so she was calling me mean because I would run over a squirrel. So I'm like, you don't get it. If you slam on your brakes or swerve and somebody's behind you, you
mm-hmm.
potentially have endangered a human life for a rodent. And I'm sorry, as cute as I think squirrels are, and I'm not going to go out of my way to kill them, you know,
yeah.
you just have to
no,
set a limit to priority. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't go around purposely looking for them with a 22 gauge or something.
Well, that's not what I was getting at. I was saying you swerve and then there's somebody on the sidewalk and you mow them down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because you instinctually reacted to the squirrel. Although I do laugh because, oh, this, I'm going to try and make this story short, but my friend was learning how to drive when we were teenagers, and her dad was a truck driver, and so he was teaching us how to drive, and he was driving in this particular moment, and there was a dead cow in the road. We live in kind of a rural area. And he was lecturing us as we pull up to this cow, and we're in a sedan, like an old, like, 90s boat sedan. And
oh my God,
he's like, you don't swerve to avoid animals. You don't pull into traffic. You don't go onto the curb because you're going to cause an accident, you know, like what we just talked about. But this is a cow. You're like, plows the car into this animal. He just plows it right into the cow. And we get like two flat tires and the car isn't running. And we are out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
This is before there were cell phones. You know, most people didn't have them, and even if you'd had them out in this area, you're not going to get service. So we had to, like, walk down the highway in the middle of the night to find somebody to let us use our phone to get tow. Yeah, and the whole time he's just like, it's okay. This is better than having swerved around because that would have been a dangerous situation. I'm like, why wouldn't you just slowly slow down before you hit the cow and then go around it when it's safe? You know what I mean? Like, if you're last minute seeing the cow that's dead in the middle of the road, you aren't paying attention.
Like, oh no, bro.
We still laugh about this all the time. Like, do you remember when your dad was teaching how to drive and you just like ran into the cow?
Oh, that is because I could definitely, as I was saying, see that for smaller animals. But yeah, you're right. For something the size of a cow, you would just slow down and stop.
Well, and it's a dead cow, so it's not like it's even getting out of the road. And you should have never been surprised by this. Like, it is, we saw it from a long ways away.
Yeah.
And it's a rural road, you know, late at night. There is, like, no traffic. So go around the cow.
Oh, anyway, that is too funny.
Most driving lesson ever. Just run into dead cows. It's safer than what? I don't know. Anyway.
I feel like next? That belongs in a poem. All right. Up next we have... Up next, we have Not Here at All by Damn It Dave, and it goes like this. I think therefore I am, but maybe I'm a dream. Perhaps life is a scam the gods take to extreme. Because I think does not mean I exist. I could be just a kink upon creation's list. When push comes down to shove, could be I was designed as just some figment of another person's mind. I think therefore I am what moron made that call. Just maybe life's a sham, and I'm not here at all. End poem.
Oh, great read, Pam. I've always liked rhyming. You know, it's usually a pretty classic rhyme, but his flow works really well, and I don't feel like it compromises the theme of his piece. Like, it doesn't change the meaning. So I appreciate that about this. I also like the title, Not Here at All, and then it talks about, I think, therefore I am, but then the concept of it is maybe I am not. Like, just because I think doesn't mean that I necessarily exist. The quote, although I think it's funny, like, what moron made that call? My brain instantly answered with the card. like, you know, of the French philosopher, you know, with the idea being that if the only thing I know for certain is that I am, because everything else is perception. and perception can be flawed and perception can be wrong. So it could be that literally everything else except for my own consciousness is flawed perception, is like a figment of my own imagination. And the only thing you can be certain about is that in some shape or form, even if it's just consciousness, you exist yourself and nobody else. Is kind of what it's getting at. And then I love that this is kind of takes that concept and twists it and puts it on like self-doubt. Like maybe I don't even exist. Like what if the whole concept of me is it doesn't exist? And then that in my mind is even more complicated by the fact that I am perceiving this poem. Like I don't know that damn thing exists. You know what I mean? Like I'm reading this poem, I'm perceiving this poem, I'm interpreting this poem, but I don't actually have any proof of his existence. So maybe he does not, which is kind of the point of René Descartes' first principle. But I really enjoyed the piece because it does kind of play on that, at least in my mind, because it's me, my perception of the piece. So I don't actually have that he is here at all. So kind of a fun toying with philosophy. So I enjoyed it very much. How about you, Kim?
Yeah, definitely. I did appreciate this one. And you're right. He does always, when he always has great meter to his rhyme, and he never compromises or takes away from the message he's trying to get across. I really enjoy and appreciate how this rite is about offering up thoughts on existence and, you know, the idea of proof of existence. And it delves into philosophy and theology, you know, and the idea of, you know, is this all part of a big game, a big sham, as he says. I really like, because I think does not mean I exist. I could be just a kink upon creation's list. When push comes down to shove, could be I was designed as just some figment of another person's mind. And, you know, I think that's a very common theme in, you know, you see it in movies and books. What was that one movie with Jim Carrey where he played a person who didn't realize they were in the Truman Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, where it was a reality TV show, but he thought it was his real life and it was all controlled. It makes me think of that movie and that idea. So really a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. I loved the Truman Show. The movie. It's such a twisted concept. Although I guess the weirdo in me always just thought it from the framework of ethics. And going back to like the kind of mouse or rat concept, like, yeah, you shouldn't really have someone living in a false world bubble when they think it's real. That's extremely unethical, but wonderfully philosophical to think about.
It is. It is. We have to agree. Yep.
Wonderful comment, Pam. What do we have up now?
We have Myths and I by Weaver of Dreams, and we have an audio for that. So I will mosey over to the studio and push play.
The mystical world and I have held an uneasy truce, as all my life I've been told I have a power I should use. My logical mind says no, but the ethereal truth-seeker has patiently waited in the wings since I named my pagan persona. I now accept I'm a hedge witch, that the world I shunned as myth is as real as that I see around me. Not one step too far, it's too close. I do not say I now hear spirit voices, or extrude ectoplasm with aplomb. I've newly merged my id and ego to allow my superego to belong.
wonderful SoundCloud from Weaver of Dreams. I know I say this every time, but I mean it every time. I love getting SoundClouds from people. I think it's so, it really adds something, and it adds texture and it adds meaning to hear the poetry in the author's voice, because I feel like you hear it read the way it was intended to be read, and that just makes it more fascinating, more deeper. Like, I think you I get a better sense of the meaning of the piece because it's the pauses are where they should be. So always appreciative of SoundClouds, and this one is no exception. Wonderful reading voice, very soft and airy, and really added a mellow tone to this write. So thank you. I enjoyed this piece that it starts from a kind of logical sense, like a denial. You know, the mystical world and I have held an uneasy truce. And so even prior to this, there was understanding the mystical world was real, and that there was power available to them. And yet the logical mind says no, but it was not deniable. So I found that concept fascinating, like the resistance but not resistance. It's like a caving to something better, almost like an opening of a cocoon in a way. You know, I now accept I'm a hedge witch. You know, so it's a wonderful write. I'm not sure whether the author actually is a hedge witch, or if this is a piece of fantasy writing. So I don't really want to, you know, get too deep into that because I don't want to presume one way or the other. But, you know, the idea of accepting something as real that is maybe not regularly seen as fascinating, especially when you take it in the context of the quote that Ephesiana offered that does have that I think, therefore I am concept, you know, about perception again. And the only thing that you can be really sure of is the fact that you yourself exist at least as a consciousness. And if that's the case, then, you know, what are the chances that perhaps the world is greater than your consciousness, than your ability to perceive it outside of the limitation of that is kind of a fascinating concept. I do like, too, at the end that it says, I do not say now I hear spirit voices or extrude ectoplasm with aplomb. I've merely merged my id and ego to allow my super ego to belong, which gets into more of a psychology aspect that gets then tied into the philosophy. You know, you're now kind of tying Freud in with Descartes, which is, I think, an interesting concept because I think they kind of get overlapped a bit. But one is like larger scale thinking, like external, and the other one is really kind of internal, you know. And just for people who don't know, you know, the id, according to Freud, is the part of someone's psyche or mental development that deals with instincts and desire. And ego is kind of the part of your brain that regulates organization and realism. Between instinctual desires. It's kind of like higher level thinking. And then superego has more to do with morality. Fascinating. And I love the addition of psychology to the philosophical quote that started off, you know, to find that internal strength and instead of reject it, to embrace it. Kind of merging planes of existence. So I enjoyed this write, so thank you, Weaver of Dreams. And Pam.
Yeah, that was a great comment. I'm glad you said the definitions of the id, the ego, and the superego, because while I knew them many, many years ago, I had forgotten them. So that was cool to get that extra information. You know, I really like that Weaver took a different approach. And to me, the main idea of this was a woman who has found a way to balance, you know, the powers that she holds within, but not just the powers, but the different aspects of herself. From what I know about Weaver, she does usually tend to write in stories, but I could totally see her being a hedge witch, you know, learning things about plants and healing with plants. You know, so she's a pretty smart cookie. And, but yeah, I like, you know, this one definitely did have a different approach. It made me think about the idea how one person's myth is another person's truth. And there's a kind of spirituality in the first couple parts. And then, as you said, there brings in the psychology. So there really is, to me, this idea of learning to accept all sides of yourself and having them merge and work together to create balance. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I like that comment, you know, the sides merging to create balance, especially when I think about it in context of how at least this concept was taught to me in psychology courses that I took. Is the issue is kind of like an iceberg, you know, where the ego is mostly above ice, and then the superego is both above and below ice on one side, and the id is under, kind of as an illustration of consciousness, of like how aware you are of these things. And so, like, if you didn't have the superego, if you didn't allow the superego to belong, it would be very unbalanced. It wouldn't work very well. So I like that as a wonderful comment.
Cool. Well, I like that analogy. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have I Wish the Non-Existence of the Dreaded Curse of Distance. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read, please.
All right. This is I Wish the Non-Existence of the Dreaded Curse of Distance by Daniel Deschino. Brilliance is a radiant light, the myriad explosions within a star, and the minds of men use it to describe the minds of men, as the mind of Einstein birthed atomic brilliance for earthbound death. Stories grow with every action as an infinite fractal library, most buried with the death of each memory. But sometimes the stories burst collections and books, myths and legends, and change the direction of reality to all stories' future as the original is forgotten. Once a creature looked up and saw what it saw, and the word distance was born, and it went to it, and in a field of tall grass, a fallen tree became tool of which front feet lifted to birth the hands of human creation, and descendants are curators of tradition, and its descendants create walk. Once a creature lifted itself with hands onto a deadwood tool there in the distance and walk, today I stand with creaking back, calloused hands, and tired eyes to watch a toddler discover a grassy lawn, his world a few yards round and within his reach. And I struggle to breathe with the worry of asteroids above and plastic bottles in aging landfills deep in the forests of Japan. End poem. I really enjoyed this write. I like how it goes so far back, both in human evolution, but also in like childhood development, you know. At one point, there was a time before people existed, and so these concepts of something being distant, of something being far away, didn't exist. Like, that concept had to be developed, it had to be understood. I think probably part of that concept, at least, is instinctual, you know, to animals. It was probably dates back quite a bit further than humanity. But you know, at some point it didn't exist. It is something that is conceptualized and had a word assigned to it, you know. And then as things evolved and things changed and the human mind grew, you know, other things grew. Concept of grabbing, the concept of walking, you know, learning, all of these things started so long ago. And I love, too, that it's kind of tied into, like, the original is forgotten, you know, so he's telling the story of this, but it is just a story of this, because the original occurrence is lost to time, because you can't communicate something before the concept of it exists. And then that is then tied into parenthood, you know, the story is paralleled with watching a toddler discover the grassy lawn. And the things within its reach are very similar to that human development, that learning, that exploring. You know, so even though all of these concepts came to being long ago, they're constantly reintroduced to every child who is exploring and learning about the world for the first time. So I love the cyclical nature of that. But then again, it's put into the framework of the narrator himself, you know, watching the child. And having learned all of these things and watching them relearn it. And while enjoying that moment, there's also the panic, the struggling to breathe because of the understanding of all of the other things the toddler is not aware of, like potentially the earth being destroyed by asteroids or other natural disasters and pollution, even half a world away. And the effects and ramifications that that might have on the child or future generations, and the paranoia that that brings, the anxiety of knowing of possibilities for horrible things. And then it ties all back into that title. You know, I wish the non-existence of the dreaded curse of distance, like if those concepts had never come into being, then other concepts wouldn't have come into being, and then I would not have anything to be paranoid or anxious of, because if there was no thought, then I would overthink, essentially. So I really like it. I love how it is both personal and small scale, while also applying it to much larger scale. Concepts all at once, like to see the big and the small, to be able to see the trees in the forest. I think this piece does a really great job of that. It's interesting twists of perspective and time. So I love that. I thought it was a great write. So wonderful, Daniel. Kim, what do you think?
Yeah, this is definitely an intelligent and thoughtful write. And like you said, I too really liked the fact that it became personal, but it also looked at a big picture throughout history. I really like where he brings up Einstein with the minds of men as the mind of Einstein birthed atomic brilliance for earthbound death. And, you know, There's this idea of, you know, would so many deaths have happened if such a thing as, you know, atomic energy hadn't been invented? You know, would they have just found a different way? Like many of the other rites we've had, and, you know, it just really brings up philosophical questions that really make you think. I also really like how it talks about, you know, history being passed along and stories becoming changed throughout generations. And I, you know, I couldn't help but think about, even though I was talking about stories, about art, because if you look at the difference between, you know, like prehistoric art, like on cave walls, compared to more modern art, you can see such an advancement where people really started, you know, practicing in their form and tools or technique of creating art and how it grew and changed over the centuries. I really like the phrase, to bird the hands of human creation and descendants are curators of tradition, and its descendants create walk. And then, of course, the bringing in the toddler near the end was such a nice touch because, you know, as you were mentioning, it makes it more personal because we can look back at all the things that have happened over in history and be in awe of it, but we've never been personally, that, you know, so many things in history, we haven't been personally there. But we oftentimes have that opportunity to observe that next door neighbor, observe our own children or other people's children, and just see the joy in their eyes and how they process and learn by doing. So really an excellent rite and very well done.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that that line, too, about, not funny, I don't know why I chose the word funny. I'm picking weird words out of my own brain today. My brain is in a weird place. but the Einstein birthing the atomic bomb, you know, like, it's like all of these different ways that things could have gone, you know, like we have all this brilliance. We have all this ability to think and all this ability to do things, and we choose to describe other people and blow things up. Like, you know, I thought that was an interesting point, you know, just like to think of the, you know, the weird ways that we've decided to take knowing, that we've twisted knowledge in kind of a negative direction in a way. And
yeah,
as far
that
as is aspect, you know, it made me think of like the way, even the word myth, you know, we take people's religions, you know, people who aren't alive anymore, and just call their religion myth. You know, like how would people feel if you did that about a religion that people follow today? You know, it probably wouldn't be looked on too kindly, but because those people aren't around anymore who believe those things, it kind of gets filed away with fiction, you know? You know, people believed in the Greek gods. Like, people believed in the Roman gods. They weren't, like, fairy tales. It wasn't like reading Aesop's fables. Like, they built huge temples and prayed to these gods. They sacrificed animals. They did all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
In the name of
definitely. God. A very important part of their lives.
Absolutely. But because time has passed and those memories are fading and we're only reading it through this, you know, lens of history, it gets labeled as a myth. You know, it's right there, like, with mermaids and stuff. So it's interesting. So anyway, I really enjoyed the ride. I thought it was great. And I liked the passages that you pointed out as well.
Yeah. All right. Up next, we have Obsessiveness About Obsession by Jesna Sajan. And it goes like this. Millions and millions of minions surrounded by my nervous mind. I wished everyone to accept me, fit me in. I wished everyone to accept me, fit me it. My body image is too much obsessed. I see horns in each cluster like the thorns of a withered rose that poke my nerves every millisecond perfectionist of procrastination pulls. Where the north never shakes hands 180 degrees away and the south is kept far from expecting a long jump someday. Sunrise in the east, what about the moon? Darkness shines when the sun never sleeps. Why do I never find time to let me be me? Let me be the way I am till I am history. End poem.
Great read, Pam. What a fascinating read. The way it started with millions and millions, you know, made me instantly think of Carl Sagan and his little blue dot. Oh gosh, why can't I think of the name of that documentary? But because it starts off with like millions and millions and millions, you know, but then of minions surround my nervous mind. And that just Well, first of all, the word minion now for me is always synonymous with those little yellow, you know, henchmen that Disney created. So I just picture, like, tons of those, like, rather anxiously and frenetically, you know, activating nerves. You know, my body image is too much obsessed, you know, to want to fit in, to want to be normal, and to have all this anxiety and all these voices in your head all at once, you know. And to see horns in each cluster, like the thorns of a withered rose that poke my nerves every millisecond. Perfectionists of procrastination poles, I think of, you know, to see the bad in everything, to see the negative all the time, to see the horns, to see thorns, and to be, like, harassed by them, even though it's, you know, your own mental state, like your own perception of what's going on. And to want to be perfect, but only be able to see the imperfections, to only be able to see the bad things. And then the next piece to me, I feel like kind of is discussing bipolar, you know, to have the two poles, the light and the dark, and how opposite those are from each other, you know, and as someone else who has bipolar, you know, it's relatable in a sense. You know, the mania and the depression are so absolutely opposite from each other, and yet they're not. They're not, you know, but you do randomly expect that long jump, you know, to go from functional to suddenly not functional. And not functional is ironically both the North and the South Pole. Like, to be depressed in a depressive state, I think most people are at least familiar with the concept of what that is. You know, the not being happy, the feeling really down, you know, the self-harm, the inability to find joy in anything or motivation to do anything. It's usually accompanied with, like, lack of hygiene and sleeping too much and eating poorly. You know, there's so many things, and I think most people are kind of familiar with that concept and the negativity of that. But the flip side of that coin is the mania, and the mania is the not sleeping. It's the hyperactive brain. It's the too many thoughts happening all at once. It's, you know, absorbing too much and thinking too quickly and wanting to do everything and feeling like you can do everything and that you don't need sleep and that you can take on the world. Which sounds great, and yeah, you know, you do feel real happy, but that's not sustainable, and it's really risky. You know, you can't go, like, without three days without sleep and then go drive somewhere and be going, like, 120 because you feel like you're on top of the world. You know, like, that's wildly dangerous. Like, so it's not really any better than the other side, you know? And so I really enjoyed the, you know, sunrise in the east, but what about the moon? Like, you know, it's not quite right. Like, there's no order. Like, it seems orderly, but it's actually not orderly. You know, darkness shines when the sun never sleeps, to me, says, you know, the mania isn't that great. <You know? laughs> And then, you know, why do I never find time to let me be me? Let me be the way I am, for I am history, makes me think of self-acceptance, you know, learning to accept yourself for the way you are. And this is actually a conversation I've had quite a few times. So one of the things I struggle with is losing things. I lose my car keys a lot. I lose my wallet a lot. You know, any little thing that you put in my hand, if I'm not expecting it and I'm not, like, you know, if you hand me something, I have no idea where I'm going to put that down, and I am not going to have any recollection whatsoever where I put it. And so I'm going to spend a lot of time looking for it, you know? I have this little mantra that I say to myself all the time that is, don't put it down, put it away. Don't put it down, put it away. To keep, you know, just try to keep things as organized as possible, but it's still something I struggle with. But it frustrates my husband more than it frustrates me, because I've reached a point in my life where I kind of accept that about myself. And instead of trying to find solutions to not losing things, because I spent most of my life trying to find solutions to not losing things and then get frustrated when I fail and get upset with myself and, you know, like, why can't I remember to do this? Instead, like, just decided to accept that as part of me and to instead incorporate, like, the time to hunt for things into my day. And it's been so much nicer. It's been so much easier for me as a person, and I felt so much happier about it. And even though it sounds silly, like, to wake up 10 minutes early to find my car keys, I view it so much as a flaw, as something that I've, you know, learned how to make functional about myself. And so that's what kind of makes me think of this piece. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a wonderful write about anxiety and mental health and trying to learn how to cope with that and how to love yourself amidst overthinking. You know, I think and never get to the before I am. So wonderful write. I really enjoyed it. Jessica. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I really like what you had to say, because, you know, I think it's so important to have conversations about mental health and the struggles, and to get people to understand. And I think that's why poetry like this is so important. You know, I didn't even think about that being bipolar. I wasn't quite sure what I thought about it, but that one part we mentions the North and the South, and you start talking about that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense, that the different degrees of emotion. I did notice like lines like, my body image is too much obsessed. And so there's this idea of perhaps someone who has an eating disorder or you know, there, what's that one disorder where people see themselves, body dysmorphia, right? Is that the what term I'm thinking
mm-hmm.
of, where they're
yeah.
not heavy, but they see themselves as heavy, or, yeah. It
yeah.
really, that part right there makes me think of the idea of somebody who has body dysmorphia. And you see within this, like, the idea of somebody who, like, that last stanza with the questions, why do I never find time to let me be me, let me be the way I am till I am history, is that idea of someone who has trouble accepting themselves, has trouble accepting, you know, their flaws, or not flaws, but, you know, the idea of those struggles that we oftentimes have. I know I too, man, I need to adopt that mantra. Don't put it down, put it away. Because I have had plenty of times where I've set something down, and then when I finally find it again, if I find it again, it's like, how the heck did it end up there? But yeah, I thought this was an extremely relatable and important write, looking at the struggle with mental health and perception of self, and the idea of, you know, how can I learn to embrace and accept who I am? So excellent write and very well done.
The self-acceptance part, you know, that's the tricky part. But I did really enjoy this write. I felt like it did a really good job, too, of getting at that anxiety and, like, the almost self-harassment, you know, that accompanies these kinds of disorders. So, wonderful write and great comments, Sam. Lots of good ones today. Lots of philosophical, thoughtful pieces. Excellent prompt.
I do like them. I love delving into the philosophical type rights that, and this was definitely a great prompt that Stacey chose to inspire. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And up next we have, holy smokes, that's not the poem. That's the prompt. Okay.
You know, that freaked me out too. I thought that as well. So for people who are listening, they put the quote at the beginning of this poem, but they took a picture of it, and it is very small, and it looks like it's their poem when you first, there's just no reading that without a like a magnifying glass or a microscope. But fortunately, that is not the inspiration for it. But it also scared me. I opened it. I'm like, whoa, I can't read that.
Oh my God, I'm so glad I was not alone in that thought and that I scrolled down a bit because, yep, there we go. Plus, thank goodness he has played us with a SoundCloud. So our next poem, Grasping Rainbows by G.A. Grimm. And I'll head over to the studio and here we go.
Grasping at Rainbows by G.A. Grimm. I know the sun is shining once more. I see it through the crack in the door. People are out there, living away. It's looking like another great day. But I cannot get out of my bed. Because I can't get out of my head. I'm just going to sit this one out. As the rest of the world goes about. I'm so tired of daring to dare. Turning from my reflection's sad stare. Reminding me of the things I lack. Wondering why he's not smiling back. Reaching for the stars, but falling flat. Missing each single time I'm at bat. Trying to get through all of my doubt. Stepping up to fight, but get knocked out. It's too damn hard to always be brave. Easier to give in, just to cave. Miserable, but safe here in my head. To keep laying in this goddamn bed.
Excellent SoundCloud from G.A. Grimm. I've really enjoyed his SoundClouds. I think I heard the first SoundCloud that he sent in like maybe a month ago. And I just really like the timbre and cadence of his voice. There's something very soothing about it. So thank you so much for the SoundCloud. I also really liked this piece. I mean, this focuses pretty heavily on that downward side of the emotional spectrum. But to me, it takes the quote and kind of says, like, I think, therefore I am, but the thoughts are heavy, and I am, but it doesn't mean I'm living. You know, it's not, I think, therefore I'm alive. It's just existence. And really gets kind of at the depressive scope of things. I really liked the middle stanza, you know, the I'm so tired of daring to dare, turning from my reflection, sad stare, reminding me of things I lack, wondering why he's not smiling back. You know, as someone who has been depressed and is depressed pretty cyclically, you know, I find it really relatable, you know, to look at yourself in the mirror and have this rational part of your voice in your head just saying, like, just smile, just be happy. Like, you see the sunshine, you see that everyone else is happy. You know, life isn't that miserable. You have all these things to be thankful for. Like, it's a good day. And yet, you're not happy, you know. And you see that and you feel that, the weight of that and the heaviness. And I think this poem does a really good job of conveying that weight, you know, to look at your reflection and wonder why you're not smiling back, you know, to have this internal thing that's just like, would you just smile, like just smile, and it just doesn't happen. You know, and then I also really liked that last stanza, particularly those last two lines, miserable but safe here in my head to keep laying in this goddamn bed. Because it's miserable, but it's safe. You know, it's the comfort zone. It's the only thing you have energy to do, you know, the only thing that's manageable. And yet it's still frustrating. You know, it's still this goddamn bed. Like, you don't even really want to be there. It just feels like the only place you can make it to sometimes. So I really enjoyed this. I think it did a really good job of conveying, like, that heavy gloom that comes with depression. So really well done, T.A. Grimm. Great write. Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, great comment there. I really like this one. It had a nice rhyme and flow to it. I too really like and appreciate when G.A. Grimm makes a recording of his poetry. Well, you know, I appreciate when anybody does, but he has a really nice reading voice. I thought this was a strong emotive write on depression and the way it drags you down. And I like how you brought up that last stanza with the bed, because when you deal with depression, and then this is a very relatable write to me because, you know, it's been a lifelong battle for me. The bed becomes the bed, the couch, or wherever is your place that you end up spending, you know, days at a time or, hours at a time is, it's a love-hate relationship. Like, you love it because it's the one place you almost feel secure, and yet you hate it because you know there's more out there. The other part that I really particularly liked was that third stanza with the idea of looking at the reflection, and I am so tired of daring to dare. Like, just the exhaustion of going on with life, even though you're not actually doing necessarily anything physically demanding, but just existing takes, strength and willpower that sometimes you feel like you don't have. So this is just, to me, an absolutely wonderful write and a great response to the prompt. So very well done.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean about the, and what he means about that daring to dare. You know, it seems so silly. It's the smallest thing that can just take everything out of you, and it doesn't seem like they should. You know, I remember a time where I was extremely depressed to the grocery store. Like, I could not make it to the store. You know, I'd get up and I'd have a really hard time, and even getting dressed or changing my clothes or taking a shower. And I was literally eating like the weirdest stuff because it was like the only food that I had left in the house. You know, I mean, like, weird stuff. Like, that random can of beans that you bought, I don't know how long ago, with, like, the weird-shaped pasta that you shoved in the back, or, like, you know,
yep,
the quinoa that you're not quite sure how to cook, but I guess you're going to figure it out today because you can't go to the store.
Yeah.
it's not happening.
No, I get that. I've been there before. Yeah.
No one talks about the weird meals you eat during depression, okay? And there have been some weird meals. But that exhaustion, you know, the daring to dare. Those are those days that you, like, push yourself beyond to just, like, literally put pants on. And it sounds really silly to be exhausted by that, but that's how it feels. And even worse is you still have that voice in the back of your head that's telling you it's really stupid that this is exhausting you. But then also that's part of the compounding problem, because that's just another negative voice in your head that's not helping. You know, you're not helping your depression with self-judgment. But you're not going to get out of it either in the moment. So, wonderful, right? Very well done, T.A. Grimm. Enjoyed this very much. What do we have going on now, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have The Last Rite by Kenny W. And Babler, go ahead and give that a read, please.
This is The Last Rite by Kenny W. What comes first, death or the end of the world? If it's the end of the world, will we have cheated death? Will he be pissed, do you think? Well, it would be at 8 billion of us at the same time, I guess, so we could share the wrath. At the end of the world, is death redundant? Maybe he'll be happy. My job is done. It's been the devil's own work. Irony if he retires and is given a clock. I guess, in truth, it is all one and the same. Unless there is a biblical uprising so we can all witness the last big bang together. As in the end, it was at the beginning or something. Whatever. Blasphemy aside, best plan for death. Do a few good, selfless things to cover yourself, though don't be obvious about it. And acting contrite doesn't mean you are. Difficult to find the road to Damascus. Death waits for no man. Cheat him at your peril. Beware of horsemen, sickles, and such like. The Hitchhiker's Guide mentioned a restaurant at the end of the universe. Good place to wait. Join me. I enjoyed the cleverness of the title on this one, where last rites, rite is spelled W-R-I-T-E-S, as in like the last thing that you write, and yet, you know, obviously the play on last rites is in the things are written, read right before you die in a religious context. I also found the punctuation in this piece particularly interesting. In all of the places that it seems like it should be a question mark, there's a period. And then places where it's not a question have a question mark that make it a rhetorical question. You know, will he be pissed, do you think, ends in a period. And yet, as in the end, it was as at the beginning, has a question mark. So I found that really fascinating because I think that affects and influences the tone of this piece. And this piece seems like both introspective, but also somewhat detached and tongue-in-cheek. Like there's some kind of wry humor in here that almost seems like peppered with just a little bit of bitterness because of this like sardonic tone that it takes. And then I enjoy all of the different takes on death and how this will have gone. You know, like if everybody... you know, if it comes at the end of the world, and if death comes first, then who cares about the end of the world? Like, everybody's dead, so, okay, who cares? To me, my instinctual answer to that is everyone that is not human, you know, all of the plants and animals might care. I mean, I guess define care, and then also include who is in everyone. You know, there's scopes of that, you know, but then if the end of the world comes before everyone dies, how does that work exactly? Like, how do you live in a world that's ended? Which there my mind goes to the book The Road, which is extremely depressing. And there, it just gets more depressing. It is maybe the most depressing thing that I've ever read. I did really enjoy it, but man, it is dark. And every time I think it's gotten as dark as it's going to get, it gets a little darker. Because it's about people who are still alive after basically the end of the world. But not really in a religious text. It's not like religiously apocalyptic. Anyway. And then, you know, it gets more wry, like, how is the creator going to handle this? You know, how is death going to handle this? Like, death is going to be like, oh, great, everybody's dead, so I can retire now. And then pokes fun at the irony of getting a clock, you know, a traditional retirement gift, you know, being a watch or some kind of timekeeping device. And it's like, what does he hear about keeping time if everybody's dead? So that, you know, it's just kind of fascinating in all the different ways you can do it. And then, of course, I love the reference at the end to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the restaurant at the end of the universe, because it kind of shares that similar wry humor feeling to Douglas Adams in some ways, the way that this was written. So I thought that was a nice way to tie this up and to clearly point the fact that this was a piece of humor in case you hadn't caught up on that. you know, and then the invitation, like, would you like to come to wait with me at the end of the universe? And I like the idea of seeing like which comes. Wonderful piece. I will say one possibility that was not explored here is if there are people on more than one world. You know, we managed to branch out before the It adds complexity. Anyway, I really enjoyed the ride. I enjoyed the humor in this piece, too. Especially pieces where it's just like, or something, whatever. like a half-finished thought. Like, I don't feel like going down those narratives, so I'm not going to. So, wonderful write from Kenny W. Your thoughts, Sam?
Yeah, I, too, really enjoyed this one. It did have wonderful wordplay, great humor. Even the title, as you said, with the wordplay of the way they spelled rights, you know, in the last rites was really cool. And I, too, really liked the nod to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I think was, as you said, a nice way to wrap things up because it adds to the humor. And to me, this whole rite gives a way of showing that we can look at things many different ways. You know, that I love how he blends together the mention of biblical with the Big Bang. You know, unless there's a biblical uprising so we can all witness the last Big Bang together, as in the end, it was as at the beginning or something, whatever. You know, they're just like such fun biting lines to this. And I also really like, and I think this part's relatable to our modern days, is do a few good things, selfish things to cover yourself, though don't be obvious about it. And to me, I think that really pokes at those people who do good deeds in front of cameras, in front of cell phones, you know, constantly, you know, making sure they get posted on social media in order to show what a good person they are. So just a wonderful, clever write and very well done.
Yeah, the false piety, I love that sarcastically. You know, I think, it makes me think of those videos where people go on YouTube or they go on Instagram or TikTok or any number of social media sites. And they, like, go to homeless people and give them money, you know, or do some kind of, you know, act that seems like an act of charity. But all I can think about when I watch these things is, like, you're shoving a camera in this homeless person's face while you give them money. Like, how uncomfortable. You know, like, do they want to be on camera? Like, how can they possibly react to this? You're, like, really putting them on the spot, and you're making this really uncomfortable, and it's no longer an act of charity at this point. It's not. It's not an act of charity. You're getting something out of it. You're profiting off this. You're going to get views and revenue and everything else, and it feels very exploitative to me. Like, I just... They kind of make me feel sick. You know, if you want to do good deeds, but don't do it with shoving a camera in someone's face. Like, do it because it's the right thing to do and not because you want people to like your video on the internet. Like, I don't know. It makes me kind of nauseous. and I hadn't really thought of that before in the context of people who decide to do really religious things, you know, like the end of their life because they think they're going to die, you know, not because it's the right thing to do, but because suddenly they're very concerned about which set of gates they're going to be walking through. You know, and I don't think that's really supposed to be the intention of, you know, living a faithful lifestyle. You know, you should do things because it's the right thing to do, because it's the ethical thing to do, because living a good life is about living a good life and helping people, not about getting rewarded for it. So, anyway, I really like to point that out, because, yeah, I can't bear to watch those. I think they're terrible.
Oh, they really are. Yeah, just, as you said, extremely nauseating and sad. All right, yeah. Up next we have Dreams and Dreams by Gerald E. Green. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Dreams and Dreams, written and read by Gerald Green. Dreams That Only Dream and Never Consummate filled the mind like plaque, a sludge that permeates. Dreams of dreams become the ultimate distraction of the weak, a loss that constipates. Dreams preceding action, ones that stew and formulate, build commitment with a glow that stimulates. Dreams that live to shape and fabricate walk the path of success, where fulfillment escalates. End poem.
Wonderful SoundCloud from Gerald. Again, a really pleasant reading voice. And I love the way he articulated and gave weight to certain words. So well done. And thank you so much for the SoundCloud. I enjoyed the concept of this piece, the dreams and dreams. I almost feel like it's related to one of the pieces we read earlier tonight. I think it was the very first one that was about how thoughts are great, but like if you don't do anything with them, like if they just live as thoughts, they're really not much good. You know, like you didn't act on them, you didn't develop them, you're just, you know, thinking for the sake of thinking. You know, what value does that have? I think most philosophers would argue quite a bit, but, you know, as far as like actual output, you know, actual communication of those ideas, I think it's far outweighs, you know, value-wise. And I think this kind of develops on that concept, you know, dreams that only dream fill the mind like plaque. A sludge that permeates. First of all, I love the language there, plaque and a sludge. Like, it's just gross. You know, that's heavy. It's kind of a heavy, distasteful language choice that I think works really well. But, you know, a dream that you don't do anything with just kind of rots. And so, you know, what good is that? Like, that's not a good thing. And then dreams of dreams are just distracting. You know, it's a distraction of the week. Like, oh, I wish I could. But when you're just dreaming of dreaming, like when you're just fantasizing, but not taking any action and are never going to take any action in that direction, you know. Like, oh, I wish I were famous, you know, while you work towards your degree, you know, in something that will never make you famous, you know. Like, that isn't going in that direction and isn't going to get you there. You know, it's just distracting. Like you're putting your energy into something that isn't going to do any good. I also really liked the phrase, a loss that constipates. You know, I have a weird grieving process. I've discussed it a few times on here where I don't, when somebody dies or goes through something traumatic, I don't process it right away. Like I get it on a factual level. Like factually it makes sense to me, but there's no emotion tied to it for quite some time. It's not until much later that I then emotionally process what happened. I like to call it emotional constipation. And so the fact that this here says a loss that constipates makes me think of that. You know, when you're dreaming of a dream and it's something that's never going to come to fruition, and you're feeling like the loss of that, of a dream that's never going to be realized because you're not taking any action for it to be realized, you know, will kind of back you up in a way. So I again, really enjoyed that word choice. You know, and then dreams that happen before action, you know, the implication being there that there will be action, that's called inspiration. You know, that's the this is what I want to achieve and I'm going to get there. And you kind of dedicate yourself to that idea and you decide how you're going to get there. You know, the dreams where you're building your pathway, where you're thinking, okay, this is where I want to go. How am I going to get there? And the thought that goes into that, you know, now we're getting closer to something that's going to bear fruit. You know, you're actually planting a tree here and not just staring at a seed. So I really enjoy that is brought up, like the fact that that's talks about, you know, before you take action, you have to have a plan. Like you have to have that dream, the goal, you know, And then dreams that live to shape and fabricate, walk the path of success where fulfillment escalates, you know, dreams that come true. Isn't that the ideal, right? That's the grand goal. It kind of makes me think too about my time in high school. I know that sounds, I'm a pretty heavy thinker. I spend a lot of time in my head, and my best friend is what I would call a doer. She charges right in. And we've always worked very diametrically opposed like that. That's just how we functioned. And it is always funny because we'd go to write essays, right? And she would start right away. And she'd do draft after draft after draft after draft after draft. And I would write my essay in my head. So it looks like I'm not doing anything. It looks like I'm playing video games. It looks like I'm watching TV. It looks like I'm making dinner. But in my head, I am writing and rewriting and rewriting the essay probably just about as many times as she is. You know, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to make this point and this point, and this is where I'm going to pull that essay, you know, that evidence from, and this is where I'm going to pull that supporting bit from. By the time I sit down to actually write the essay, I'm just banging it out because I've already written it. You know, so to her, it looks like it took me 2 hours to write this essay, but it didn't really take me any less time. Our just ways of getting there were very different. But now that we are both adults and in careers, and we ironically are in the same career field, we still operate the same way. And I would say her quick action a lot of times works to her benefit. However, there are times where my forethought works to mine. By the way, we are a really awesome pair when we work together. So it just makes me think of that, like what value, again, do thoughts have? They have some value, but the action is key. Like if you never articulate it, it doesn't really get you anywhere. So wonderful, right? Really kind of got me thinking. So thank you, Gerald. Your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I like what you had to say, and it was fun to listen to your story about you and your friend. And I have to agree, because oftentimes people who have different ways of thinking, you know, there's strength and value in all those ways. I have to say, as simple as it was, I really like the phrase dreams of dreams. It almost, for some reason, sounds like something Shakespeare would have come up with for one of his plays or poems. It has a very classic feel to it. I do like that the main message of this is that, you know, your thoughts are important, but the idea of that, it's all great to have dreams, but dreams have to be made into goals, and goals can't be reached without eventually action. And so there's, to me, that wonderful idea that, yeah, you have to work, you have to move forward to make your dreams come true. And I too really liked that the darkness, the heaviness in that first stanza with, like, you know, the fill of the mind like plaque, a sludge that permeates. Sludge was another great word choice too, because you could just feel it moving slow and heavy and polluting. And then how the ending talks about, you know, the idea of, you know, that dreams will be brought to life when we you know, walk the path of success, when we fulfill with action. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. Sludge is just very, think of like a heart attack. Like with the use of the word plaque and then sludge. Like,
oh yeah.
It's
I could
dry,
see that, definitely.
But I like it. I do like what you said too about dreams of dreams, right? It almost does feel like some excerpt from like a Midsummer Night's Dream or something. I could almost hear Mercutio like spewing some lines where he talks about dreams of dreams. And yet I do feel like the idea, the concept would be very similar to the concept that is in this poem. You know, what good is a dream of a dream? Yeah.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yep. I could definitely see that.
So, it is very classical feeling. I agree with you. What do we have going on, Dan?
All right. Up next, we have Mindful Muses by Arcana Amor. And we have a recording for that. So, here we go.
My thoughts are my own, lest I choose to share them. Like breezes that whisper through my mind, speaking to me. Those around me are oblivious to these voices within, as they scurry past, invaded by their own contemplations, which are as alien to me as my notions are to them. Expressions, body language, auras and intuition hint clues, inviting imagined impressions to tread meditative mindscapes, in peeling perceptions of tentative telepathic thinking, scratching the surface, but faltering to dig deeply below, like trying to read unread books in distant locked rooms. Remote viewing, extrasensory perception, and clairvoyance all claim clues, accessing Akashic annals of anticipation. Yet, they know not my ruminations, perhaps mere droplets at best, that flow mindful muses in sentient seas of introspective insight, convincing reason that within those seas, I swim alone. Experience, beliefs, outlooks and misgivings influence tides that swirl storms of understanding, logic and aspirations, all cascading into rippling waterfalls of cerebral cognizance. Psyche is born from these murmurs, creating cause and effect, manifesting invisible intent into speech and actions. To think is also to feel, something shared by those around us, in empathic resonance with individual idiosyncrasies. Though insular, are we ever truly alone with our regard? Perhaps not discerned, but shared as contrived concepts. As I sail unaccompanied through waves of consideration that surge as one into an oceanic throng.
Fantastic SoundCloud. The music was like almost meditative, and then the very metered kind of, again, like almost yogic or meditative voice on top. You know, it kind of reminded me of like a slowed down version of listening to David Attenborough, narrate documentary, but with poetry. Wonderful. Great experience. Thank you for the SoundCloud and the production value that you put into that. Well done. I also really enjoyed the concept of the piece. You know, the idea that you have your thoughts, but no one really knows everything that you think or what anybody thinks. We're all kind of islands of our own thought. And while we do our best to communicate with each other, you know, via expression and body language, aura, intuition, clues, you know, all the ways that we try to communicate with each other, all of them have limitations. All of them are just scratching the surface of all of the thoughts that we have. I mean, could you imagine if someone tried to communicate every single thought that they had? Oh, man, you know, overwhelming and probably ineffective on top of that. So, you know, just that island concept, you know, the idea that no one really knows anyone else's thoughts or is able to really share all of their thoughts with anyone else. And there's that kind of solitude and isolation that comes with that. I really enjoyed the phrase too, as they scurry past, invaded by their own contemplations, you know, like almost like rodents. And I pictured like being in a big city like New York or Chicago or something where large people, groups of people kind of congregate on the street because everyone's walking and no one's really looking at each other. No one's really talking to each other. Everyone's just in their own world. And I feel like that has been especially exacerbated recently, you know, with so many people wearing headphones and looking at cell phones and, you know, just even more isolated in the physical world and buried in that mental world. But I just like the imagery of the scurrying past and being invaded by their own contemplations, almost like thoughts are parasitic, the word choice there. You know, and then I also really enjoyed the phrase here where you had about trying to read unread books. I'm trying to find it now. It's like locked up and far away in some distant room. And it's like, well, clearly you can't read that book. Like, you know, the extrasensory perception, the clairvoyance, and all of these things that you argue will help, you know, you to understand and see other people's thoughts and kind of get into them. You know, even if they are effective, are just going to be like razor blade thin of the understanding of what's going on in there, you know. And I really just love the distance that's articulated there. You know, the unread books of distant locked rooms. You're not really going to get the context. I really enjoyed that language choice, you know. And then at the very end, you kind of get into this thought of to think is to also feel. And that is shared around us. Emotions are much more easily perceived, you know, people via empathy and understanding interpersonal relationships will pick up on that, you know. So even though insular, are we ever truly alone with our regard? Because a lot of times people will be able to perceive what you're feeling. There are exceptions to that, of course, but it is less isolating. You know, sometimes I think about, you know, when I go through trauma, like I'm saying, I don't always like to talk about it. If it's something really traumatic for me, then I really don't want to talk about it. But I still like to have people nearby, you know, so like my best friends and the people closest to me will come and keep me company. And we won't do anything that has anything to do related with what happened. It'll be like, come and veg out with me on the couch and we'll watch movies and just talk. And we won't bring up the momentarily taboo topic, whatever that might be. And I feel like that's kind of what this is getting at, is, you know, that ability to know that what I'm feeling without talking about it, without articulating it, just via empathy and knowing my body language and how I am and how I function via experience. So I really enjoyed that and how perhaps that at least builds bridges between the islands, you know. As I sail unaccompanied through waves of consideration, through just one into an oceanic throng. And I loved that too, because it, for me, it was thinking about all of the thoughts that I have all of the time, and just how many thoughts I have and all of the different things that are going on in my mind at any given moment. And then to take that and be like, but that's just a drop in the sea of humanity. We're all doing that. So I particularly enjoyed that as well. And I know that Ephesiana is going to love the use of alliteration in this piece. She is a fan, and there's so much of it, and it's beautifully done, like, all throughout, you know, scratching the surface, dig deeply, tentative, telepathic thinking, peeling perceptions. Every stanza is just wonderfully riddled with this beautiful alliteration and careful word choice. So I really enjoyed this piece. It was contemplative and emotive and very well done. So thank you, Arcana Amor. Pam, what did you think of the piece?
Well, first of all, that was a very thoughtful comment. And, you know, I have to agree with you about the alliteration. Fabi will definitely like that. And it is beautiful. You know, this is a wonderful write. Great word choices. I like how, to me, the main couple of messages I get is the idea of thoughts and perception shared. And, you know, I like how he starts out with, my thoughts are my own, lest I choose to share them. And that is very true, because for the most part, and the great majority, I would say, people can't read your mind, and you know, so your thoughts are kept to yourself, and you own them until they're released. And then, of course, you know, what other people do with these shared thoughts is up to them. I like where he mentions body language and auras and intuition, hints, clues, invited and imaged impressions to tread meditative mindscapes. Wonderful lines there. I like the thought, the idea of how there's different ways to communicate, to pick up on what somebody is trying to tell us. Like the thought that, you know, somebody can be saying they're fine or they're doing good, but their body language says otherwise. I also really like where he said, experience, beliefs, outlooks, and misgivings influence tides that swirl storms of understanding, logic, and aspirations. The idea that through all of these things we learn, through all of these things we move forward and learn to connect with other people. So, excellent write and very well done.
I like the passages that you pointed out, you know, that it is true. He does say, like, less than I choose to share them. And I like how you pointed out, just like, I can't read your mind. And I feel like that's kind of a key phrase for this write, you know. You can't read my mind. I can't read your mind. Like, if you want me to understand you, you have to communicate with me. Yeah, excellent.
Yep.
Excellent observation. I'm not a mind reader. You have to actually tell me or I won't know. And then even sometimes when you tell me, depending on how you're telling me, I still may not know. So, excellent observation. I liked that summarization. Much more artfully done in this piece.
Exactly.
That's not poetry. That's just being blunt. Where are we off to now?
All right. Now we have Mind Over Matter Matters by Bluesman. And it goes like this. stranded on a dark country road in a blizzard blowing up from hell, needing a dry place to lay down before I froze to death and fell. Just then I spotted snow-laden spruce, bottom branches weighed to ground, salvation shelter from snow and wind. I passed between branches and lay down, finally dry and safe from the wind, thinking I still won't survive the night, body heat leaching out of my core, so I let my imagination take flight. I pictured myself on a Florida beach, hot sun beating down on my skin. In a meditative state, I could feel my body heat growing within. Mind over matter saved my life. Had I not been a writer, I'd have died because I'd never accept that fate in humble humility devoid of pride. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I do want to point out real quick in the footnote here, in the little author's note, it says, this is a true life story, my story. Back in the mid-1970s, I was hitchhiking to New Hope, Pennsylvania, an artist town on the Delaware River, when a blizzard hit. No cars on this dark country road, as the stark realization of my dire situation became all too real, and then my muse saved my life. Which, you know, that's a freaky situation. So glad you lived. So reading this, you know, looking, you know, being in a horrible situation, real rock and hard place, you know, walking and needing somewhere to go and not being able to find any shelter, and then finally finding shelter, you know, and it's literally just a spruce that has so much snow on it that the branches have kind of tented to form an insulated igloo. I mean, that's some quick thinking, you know, that's some smart thinking, looking around going, where can I possibly find shelter in this? And then to go into it and see that you're still feeling cold and to take your mind off it, to go into a meditative state, to stay warm, you know, warm enough to make it through the night. I wish I had the rest of the story, like, how did you get out of here? But, you know, I think it's important sometimes, especially when stuff is bad, to find that little bit of escapism, you know, to envision yourself feeling warm, to almost like self-comfort, you know, but also, you know, in the idea of meditation, you know, to make that more manifested physiologically, you know, is a strong thing to do. It's a hard thing to do, you know. For a second, I thought this poem was going to get a lot darker than it did, which I'm glad it didn't, considering it's a true story, but I was thinking, you know, hypothermia, when you go into hypothermia, it actually feels like you're really hot. In fact, people get, like, unbearably hot and will, like, strip down because they think they're sweating when, in fact, they are freezing to death. But their nerves are firing, and it feels like heat because the body is almost like in a panic. So at first I thought we were going to go down that pretty dark road of feeling hot in the ice cold because of hypothermia. But I'm glad that's not the case. I'm glad it's more about that mind over matter, about willing yourself and having the glad you made it through the night. Glad you were able to walk away from that. So, wonderful write, please, man. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is definitely a great write. And, it's a write that stands on its own. But to find out that it's a true story makes it even more impressive. You know, because I think to convey when something happens and keep the rhyme nice and tight works really well. And, I like that he wrote about the idea that, that mind over matter helped him to survive. I, too, was very glad that it didn't turn out as dark and as bad as I thought it was going to be at first, you know. And Then let's see, wonderful attention to detail, like the spotting of the snow-laden spruce, and the way the mind works to think about the idea of finding shelter. And but I think obviously the main focus of this is where he writes about how he pictured himself on a Florida beach. I pictured myself on a Florida beach, hot sun beating down on my skin, the meditative state. I could feel my body heat growing within. You know, I like the end with the humble humility, devoid of pride, like learning to not be so prideful that you know, like he could have just kept walking, but instead he realized what he needed to do is stop and try a different approach and be open-minded to a different approach. So excellent write and very well done.
I like that angle that you took on it about a different angle and a different approach. Yeah, that lack of pride, I think, is important. You know, not getting bullheaded about finding another place before you're so worn out that you aren't able to find somewhere. You know, it was seriously desolate and you keep marching, and what if there wasn't a spruce with branches? You know, timing sometimes can be everything. And sometimes you got to get over yourself to make the right situation, you know. I would have respect for people who can admit that they're wrong. And wonderful right, please. Well, we've got 8 minutes left. Where are we headed now, Pam?
All right. Well, this might be our last poem for the night. It is The Thought Song by Lockdown Lark. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please, Dabbler.
Absolutely. This is The Thought Song by Lockdown Lark. Who are we who think we are? Water sometimes has a reflection, but all particles make up a star. Just thoughts just try to make a connection. Is it wrong to think too long, just do and belong and sing the thought song? Thought can be day or night. It seems chasing an interaction. Sometimes darkness, sometimes light, a prompt to act or an abstraction. Is it wrong to think too long, to do and belong, and sing the thought song? All have a right to thought, sharing it, no reason to kill. Who will do as they ought and walk a pathway of goodwill? Is it wrong to think too long, just do and belong, and sing the thought song? Sapien tearing themselves apart, will a time come maybe when thought turns to every heart, sharing a vision of harmony? Is it wrong to think too long, just do and belong and sing the thought song? So based on the structure of this piece, I think it clearly is intended to be a song. I didn't sing it and I have no idea what the melody would be, but it's well structured. It feels very upbeat, you know. Who are we who think we are? Water sometimes has a reflection. It makes me think, you know, back to that, the Descartes thought that Ophesiana's quote was predicated on, you know, I think, therefore I am. And he's going, what ego is that? You know, you think that you are. Water sometimes has a reflection. Makes me think, you know, you see a face sometimes in the water, you see things in the water that aren't really there. And so maybe we aren't really there either. So I kind of liked that as a concept. I thought that was a really creative way to say that, you know, but we all make up a star. You know, we're all a part of something, whether we are as individuals or not, you know. I think it focuses, it's kind of reframing things more from individuality of, you know, I think, therefore I am, and I don't know that the rest of this exists, and kind of reframes it in the context of, well, we are, you know, you need to think less individualistically than that, and kind of reframes it in a, like, societal framework, you know. And then the points in here to me, you know, are saying that, you know, thought can be day or night. It seems changed in interaction, sometimes darkness, sometimes light, a prompt to act or an abstraction. You know, you can think about good things, you can think about bad things, but really you're just looking for connection. Like you're looking to fit in or to be a part of something. And it may lead to an act, it may lead to doing something, or it may not, or it may just stay like a thought. And then, you know, goes through the chorus again, you know, is it wrong to think too long? Just do and belong and sing the thought song, you know, is it okay to just ruminate? Is it okay to just think? I don't think so. I think it's, you know, thought is good. It's good to think. It's good to have thoughts. I do think, you know, as with other things, action is important as a follow-up. You know, would anybody know about the great philosophers and the people who have had so many deep thoughts and large ideas to share with the world if they didn't write it down or communicate it? You know, what good is that? You could be a brilliant genius. You could be one of the deepest thinkers in human history, maybe even the deepest thinker. If you don't write any of it down and you can't communicate any of that, does it have much value? You know, which then is its own philosophical, you know, argument, because then you're weighing like societal good over self good. Anyway, but it's an interesting point. And then, you know, that next thought, like we all have a right to thought. Sharing it, no reason to kill, I thought was an interesting line in this piece, you know, as in you shouldn't kill someone for sharing their thoughts and ideas, which, I mean, that seems really kind of obvious on the surface, but then not so obvious in the scopes of, like, the reasons why wars were started, you know. There have been a lot of religious wars, and it really is you're killing someone because of what they believe or what they think. About how the world operates. And it's kind of done over and over. Like, a lot of wars break out because of opinions and because of thoughts. It also kind of relates to the idea of, you know, words can't hurt me. I'm going to kind of cut my thoughts off there, but I do enjoy the piece. I think it's very well done, but I want to give Sam a chance to respond.
This is a creative and fun thought. I like that it's a song. I like the chorus. The chorus makes me think about teaching philosophy to young people through song. And I do really like that third stanza. The thoughts can be day or night. It seems chasing an interaction, sometimes darkness, sometimes light, a prompt to act or an abstraction. Like the idea that there's so many, there's different uses and different styles of thought. So excellent right here and very well done. And great show tonight, Babbler. You and Faith, you'll have two carryovers for next week.
Okay, great. And thank you so much, Pam, for filling in. It's always good to talk to you. I love talking through with you. You have such good things to say. So thank you for everyone who wrote. Yeah. Thank you to everyone who wrote. Thank you, everyone who submitted a SoundCloud. And thank you to All Poetry and Blog Talk Radio. And thank you for the platform. Talk to you all again in a week. Have a good night, everyone.